Just when you thought Star Wars could not get any worse, Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, came to movie theaters and ruined Star Wars forever.
There it is, coming out, shooting, blasting, just the way it opens up.
I'm bringing my dreadnought. Welcome to Last Jedi Final Debate. This is where Matt and I are going to settle, or maybe not settle, the question of, should we love The Last Jedi movie? Should we hate The Last Jedi movie? How do we treat this movie?
I think, more than anything, is that there is a healthy debate that can be had about this movie. You don't have to like it. I wish you would. I wish everyone would, obviously. But no one is stupid for not liking it. And I don't think anyone's stupid for liking it. And I think this is very reminiscent of an age-old tradition that Star Wars fans have enjoyed from the beginning of time. It is the schoolyard debate. You know, how did Darth Vader get those scars on his face? How canon are the special editions? You know, did yes. Greedo shoot first?
Han shot first.
Everyone's had disagreements. Like, do the prequels suck? Like, thank goodness we have the sequels so that people can love the prequels now, right?
Like I said, just always... when you thought Star Wars couldn't get any worse, we had 7, 8, and 9.
And now it's just, there's a new target, there's a new thing to disagree on, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think actually, historically, debating Star Wars has been a great thing. I think it's gotten less fun over the years, but I'm hoping that with time and with different content that's surfaced over the last 10 years since this movie's come out, it becomes a more enjoyable experience, at least to debate.
And I think that's one of the reasons why you and I wanted to do this limited series on The Last Jedi, because we come at it from different angles. But I think at the end of the day, both you and I are very similar in that we still love Star Wars. We still love it. We still love what it stands for. We love the stories. We love the legends. And that you and I can stand on different sides of the Force, if you will, and still be friends. We can still be friends. And I think what we've seen a lot in the Star Wars fandom is a division almost. And it's like, it's just a division of, oh, well, you're a fan of this and I'm not, and I'm a fan of this and you're not. Therefore, we cannot be friends anymore. We can't. We either have to agree wholeheartedly with each other, and by each other, I mean you have to agree to my point of view, or else we're not fans of the same thing. Right? You're not a true Star Wars fan or whatever. That, I feel, is a bit of a tragedy to have, like, this beautiful piece of Star Wars, not Star Wars, but a beautiful piece of storytelling and culture and entertainment. And then we feel like we have to, like, draw these lines in the sand and start shooting each other with red or green lasers and not like each other anymore over some creative decisions that a few individuals made.
Totally agree. I feel like the rift that it's caused in the fandom is real. It's toxic. It's more toxic than ever. I think part of that has to do with internet culture of today. Thank goodness we didn't have Twitter during the prequel era.
Oh yes. Yeah.
But I do like the other part of that is, like, I felt like after this movie in particular, I was already seeing it. It's mostly with the sequel trilogy, but like with this movie in particular, it felt like people just decided not even to be fans of Star Wars anymore. Mm-hmm. Like with the prequels, I could bond with someone over the original trilogy and they would be like, but don't come at me with the prequels or the special editions. Like I'm a purist. And it's like, fine. Like, we could still bond over the Star Wars that we share and love. Whereas this movie, it felt like people pivoted and they just dropped it all together. That makes me sad. I hope that, I hope that they can learn to disagree with me on this, but also still find the love for Star Wars.
Yeah, that reminds me. I used to work with a guy who was a kid when 4, 5, and 6 came out in movie theaters, got to see them, grew up with them, you know, had the toys, the merchandise, everything that made Star Wars, Star Wars. Watched 1, 2, and 3, and I don't know if he had any complaints about 1, 2, and 3, but at the time when we worked together, 7 had come out, 8 had come out, 9 was just about to come out, and I was like, dude, are you going to go see it? And he's like, no, I am not going to support that anymore. Like, for whatever reason, 8, The Last Jedi, it was the last movie that he was going to do for Star Wars. Yeah, it is kind of strange. But, you know, I think about it now, and I'm like, there are a lot of Disney Star Wars shows that I haven't seen, you know? Like, I think Andor was the last one that I watched fully. And it's not like I made a deliberate decision to not watch Star Wars anymore. I just kind of felt like some of the other shows didn't grab me as much as this. But there's something about The Last Jedi, Episode 8 specifically, that people felt like, this is not the galaxy that I knew a long, long time ago.
The sequel trilogy gets something of a bad rap, and I'm not going to spend too much time on the sequel trilogy as a whole, because we'll save that for, you know, maybe we'll do a mini series for 7 and 9. I don't know. We'll see. But keeping it focused on Last Jedi, I feel like the sequel trilogy gets a bad rap in a way that, like, the prequel trilogy, you could look at the bad things about it, whether it was dialogue, whether it was something corny or characters that were too goofy that you couldn't take seriously. And like, we still learned to have a good time with it. Like, you could make fun of it, but almost in a, like, we still love this whole thing sort of way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That the sequel trilogy just hasn't had that benefit. It seems like the people that hate it just straight up hate it, and it's not funny. Like, even the stuff that you might say is objectively bad, you can't even joke about, because somehow people took it just like so personally. The way they went about the trilogy, you know, mixing up the creatives that were working on it. Like, we're going to have different writers and directors for 7, different writer director for 8. Originally, they had a different writer director for 9. And I wasn't behind the closed doors on those decisions, so I don't know what they were trying to go for. But I think we can say that the result was unexpected.
Yeah.
Some might look at it and be like, oh, no, duh. But I mean, the original trilogy had different creatives working on it. So it wasn't so much that it couldn't have been different. But one thing that Episode 8 deals with is where J.J. Abrams left off with Luke Skywalker. And I feel like a common theme that people have with Episode 8 is Luke Skywalker. We're going to do a whole episode on that, so I don't want to dig too deep into that. But I feel like Rian Johnson gets a lot of flack for where Luke is in this movie, when in reality, it was the movie before that didn't even show us Luke, gave us no Luke, gave us the context that, number one, his Jedi Order that we didn't get a chance to see over the last 40 years is gone already, and that he's off hiding on some planet. So this movie starts off trying to address those key things that Episode 7 left us off with. And I think where people's enthusiasm around Luke in this movie comes from how that was handled. But that's a result, I think, of Episode 7 and where that left off.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. In some ways, you have to pick up the threads of what somebody else did. And that makes a lot of sense. But that also sets The Last Jedi apart in a very unique way from the other movies in any of the trilogies, because between 4 and 5 and 5 and 6, years had passed, right? Several years had passed between all the different episodes. And so you have this space crawl going through space that kind of catches you up on what's been going on. That's something so uniquely Star Wars, is that space crawl. But then all of a sudden 7 ends and 8 begins, and it's like no time has passed. Like, we're picking up right where the last one left, and 8 just kind of had to deal with that. From one right to the other, no time has passed.
And I mean, but imagine they did do the time jump, and what exposition would they need to go through to explain, like, Rey at that point, over the course of 3 years, I would hope, knows why he left. Like, how are they going to explain that to us? Maybe in the crawl, I guess.
They explain it in one sentence. It says, somehow Luke Skywalker returned. It's easy. I feel like they could have done that in 9 too. I hear that. You know?
One thing about this movie that I felt like a lot of flack that it got, and a lot of the people that I spoke to afterwards really, really clung to some of the lines, and a lot of the lines were like from the trailer. They like pulled a lot of lines from the trailer, and they honed in on those things. And then when they appeared in the movie, like, they really felt like Rian Johnson was trying to like deconstruct Star Wars and reinvent something new out of what it was. And they clung to the Kylo Ren lines, like, let the past die, kill it if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
They clung to Kylo Ren's lines about, like, Rey being a nobody. And I felt like that those lines, in my opinion, were taken at face value, when in reality, like, the bad guy is saying those lines in this movie. And in the context of the movie, like, the whole point of the movie is that those things are wrong, and that these are not heroes saying these lines.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really tough, because it's like, you have, at what level are you going to look at this movie? Because in some ways it does reconstruct Star Wars, right? And it flips it on its head, but then it flips it back in a different way. Let me do it this way. So this movie is the second in a set of three movies. And if you look at the original series, you've got The Empire Strikes Back, which is the middle movie in a set of three movies. And when you look at the frame, the function, the form of these two movies, they're almost completely mirror inversions of each other, right? I mean, you've got these a couple of rhymes, but then they're slightly inverted. So for example, Empire Strikes Back starts with, oh, the Empire has found the Rebel base. They got to evacuate. And they're showing up, and they got to have a last-ditch effort before they get out, right? Last Jedi starts the same way. However, it's slightly different, because in Empire Strikes Back, they're on a white, snowy planet. In Last Jedi, they're on a green, jungly planet. But Empire ends on a green, jungly planet, Dagobah. And Last Jedi ends on kind of a white, misty, desert-y, kind of deserty, yeah, type place, right? So it's like the same, but different. Slightly inverted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, because you can almost watch, like, beat for beat what is happening in Empire Strikes Back. It's almost like you're seeing it played out backwards or in reverse or somewhat inverted in The Last Jedi. And that's one of those things that's like, well, you could look at the movie face value and be like, this sucks. Or you can try to look at it from a literary standpoint. And I know I'm supposed to be like the dark side drawing it out, but I'm like, what level are we going to deconstruct this and think about this? Like, the whole point of a deconstruction is to tear things down to their basic essence and then rebuild it back up and see what happens. And I think maybe Rian Johnson did that successfully. Maybe we could debate.
I definitely recognize the rhymes. I encourage anyone who's listening to this, who hasn't watched it in a while, like, watch any of the movies from the original trilogy. Just pick any one of them, whether it's a New Hope, whether it's Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi, choose one, watch that movie, and then watch The Last Jedi, because it's interesting the choices that Rian Johnson makes with these characters that tie into any one of those as like a through thread line. For example, and we'll cover this with Luke Skywalker, the saber toss, right? Like, Luke wouldn't throw away the saber. Return of the Jedi, he literally throws away the saber. Another example is he's on Tatooine. He does the thing with R2-D2 and sees the first message from Princess Leia, calling him to arms, basically. And that scene where Luke's in the Millennium Falcon and he sees the message again feels like just like sort of a sequel to that moment, getting back into the game. In Empire Strikes Back, there's sort of the feeling that he has of Leia and the others on Cloud City through the galaxy, where this calls back to that sort of shared power. So those would be a few of the ties from the three individual trilogy movies, but there's more.
Yeah.
But I would encourage people to do that.
Can I give you two counter examples? In my mind, I'm comparing it most to Empire Strikes Back, right? Empire Strikes Back. You've got Darth Vader, you've got Boba Fett, you've got these villains who are so menacing. They are good at what they do. They are one step ahead of the rebels the whole entire time. It's fantastic. And then you've got General Hux in The Last Jedi, who's basically just a ragdoll for comic relief. The whole First Order is completely useless, right? They have this whole fleet, and they're going to blow up five resistance ships, but yet only one ship can fire, and it only has one gun. Like, why is he not repositioning his fleet to capture them in a net? Like, it's stupid, and it's idiotic. And it, for me, it, like, lowers the stakes of, okay, you have great, powerful enemies in Empire Strikes Back. Okay, this is a struggle. This is a struggle. This is a story that has high stakes and competent villains versus Last Jedi, where it's like, well, gosh, as long as the Resistance doesn't trip over their own feet, they're probably going to make it because these guys are so idiotically stupid. That's one reason why I think people don't, why people like look at the Last Jedi and they're like, this isn't Star Wars. These guys are terrible. Now, I know stormtroopers can't shoot worth a darn. Like, I understand that. I get that. That's fine.
But, and the Empire can get stopped by a native teddy bear race species of Ewoks.
Hey, man, you can't fight the logs, okay? When logs come from both sides, it's going to blow you up. You didn't prepare for that.
Yeah, unfortunately, there were no logs in this movie. maybe people would have liked it more. No, I think, I mean, that's a good point. It's hard not to address that without addressing, again, the sequel trilogy. I have a hunch. I know that J.J. Abrams said that Palpatine was going to be the big bad the whole time. I have a hard time believing that because I feel like there would have been some hints, some DNA in there, yeah. Instead of a line from post edit. Somehow Palpatine returned.
Became
the joke of the sequel trilogy, which, like, honestly, like, in my opinion, this is, of course, the Star Wars gospel, according to Matt, Palpatine always had to be the big bad in the thing. He's the Sauron of the Star Wars galaxy. Like, he is going to return, and it's fine that he returns, but, like, there should probably be more thread around it and how he ends up. And I feel like, not to impose my own will on what Rian Johnson did, he deflated what was going to build up to try to be the big bad of the trilogy by having, number one, Kylo Ren, who is super powerful, super unhinged, just unpredictable. Like, you don't know what he's going to do.
It's very chaotic.
It's not about, yeah. And so he's incompetent in that regard. But he is, like, he is making decisions to try to, like, take this ship over, right? And then Hux, I think it was intentional to sort of deflate him. And Snoke, obviously, we know the story of Snoke. Cut that character in half to hopefully set the stage for Palpatine to return as a big bad. Now, Rian Johnson wasn't super, like, overt about it, so, like, he let the next creative take whatever he had set over, but he kind of set he set a clear slate for whoever wanted to do number 9. Like, they could take over and do whatever.
This episode is sponsored by Bragboard. There's a weird problem a lot of high performers have. The better you are at your job, the more your work becomes invisible. You solve problems early, you unblock teams quietly, you prevent fires that never get seen. And then review season comes, and it looks like you just did your job. That's why I use Bragboard. It helps you capture those moments as they happen and turn them into clear, outcome-driven stories. So your impact is actually understood, not just assumed. Bragboard. Make your work visible. Start your 42-day free trial at bragboard.work. That's bragboard.work. Statistically, in Star Wars, if you fall into a pit, you are likely to still be alive and come back. So, Palpatine falls into a pit, he comes back. Darth Maul falls into a pit, he comes back. In The Last Jedi, Finn falls into a pit. Oh, just kidding. He's on an elevator. He comes back within seconds. But Captain Phasma, not so lucky. She falls into a pit. Will she come back? We don't know. Doors open. You just never know in Star Wars. People fall into a pit and they come back all the time. Luke Skywalker. Here's another callback to the original trilogy in Empire Strikes Back. Luke Skywalker falls into a pit, right? He's falling through Cloud City. But guess what? He survives and he makes it. And it's okay. So the falling into a pit survival motif in Star Wars, in Last Jedi, kept it in one place.
Strong.
But the Force is strong with that one. Kept it for Finn, but not for Phasma.
That we know of. That we know of.
So far, as of this
recording. Did you see a body? I mean, the sequel, Han Solo is also dead, right? So there's a couple in the sequel trilogy that have fallen and not made it. So
back.
I guess...
Yes.
I guess the saber impaling him may have had something to do with it.
Well, I mean, but Darth Maul cut literally in half.
Okay. Yeah.
And he gets to come back. So I don't know. I don't know about that one. There's an interesting theme in The Last Jedi that I think also when people watch this, they're like, ah, that's not Star Wars. And that is basically the good guys don't really win. They don't win, or there's a lot of failure going around, right? Like Luke has failed his job as a master. Kylo failed his job being a student. Rey fails at convincing Luke to come back. The resistance fails at getting Hope to come to them. All of this failure all around. And we'll get to the Cantabite storyline, which I absolutely hate. I loathe entirely.
Oh, don't use the H word. Not on this.
I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it on the Cantabite. But the whole Finn and Rose subplot is absolutely useless because they fail. They just fail.
Wrong.
Right?
You
missed it.
And so people
look at this and they're like, they fail.
You missed the movie.
I missed the movie, okay. Apparently. Right? But I know it ends in sort of this victorious way of Rey's rising the rocks and stuff. There's all of this failure being pointed out and looking at. And so it kind of tells this message of, hey, everybody's just a big failure. We're all just screw ups. Like Han never grew out of being a scruffy looking nerf herder. He was that until he died. Right. So that wasn't this movie, but that was the movie. But anyway, what do you say to that? The theme of failure.
Don't impose the failures of The Force Awakens on this movie. No, I like it. I like the call out. It is a theme for sure. But I don't think failure isn't not present in the other Star Wars movies. Anakin was a failure. The Jedi Council was a failure. Yoda, if anything, I almost feel like this has plenty of failure in it, but I feel like the redemption of the failure is actually the stronger theme that isn't as focused on. Like Yoda, we meet him and he's this former Jedi Master who's completely has nothing to do with the goings on of the galaxy. He's allowed this thing to just fester as he's in hiding. He's gone crazy. And yet we love him as this crazed old Jedi Master. Mm-hmm. And he's a lovable character. Like, we think it's cool when Yoda does it. But the cool thing about Luke is, like, Luke doesn't disappear before he joins the Resistance. Like, Yoda is like, you have to face Vader, and then he disappears, right? Luke recognizes... I mean,
hey,
he actually
he's 900 years old, man. You gotta give him some slack.
There will be no slack given to Yoda today.
Okay.
Yoda wouldn't give himself slack, but I like that, you know, it happens to be Yoda that gives that cool line about failure, that it's the teacher, like, it's the best teacher that you could have, and he teaches it to Luke, and then Luke actually, we get to see Luke return to form in a heroic way and do something a Jedi's never done before. We'll get into that in the Luke episode. Luke's redeemed in that failure. The mission, we're going to do a Canto Bight episode too, so I don't want to do too much spoilery things, but I feel like the redemption at the end of that failure is the actual theme to this.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much the failure itself, even though the failure is like really painful to watch. And I think everyone looks at Empire Strikes Back as sort of like the down movie. Like you have a high note, blowing up the Death Star, the down note where they lose, and then Return of the Jedi is kind of the return to form. I do think he was trying to mirror that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Empire Strikes Back does end in tragedy. I mean, Han Solo's frozen. Luke is one-handed, and he's broken, and all out. But we had this huge reveal of, oh my gosh, my dad's Darth Vader? Like, what? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Blowing everybody's minds. So it's like, it's not like The Empire Strikes Back necessarily was super strong and heroic, but or that there wasn't any struggle or failure or tragedy. I just think there's a lot of moments in The Last Jedi that just seem anti-heroic. People are, the heroes are undercut. They're not allowed to be heroes. Like, let's take, for example, Finn and Rose. Well, we'll do their whole story, but in this case, like, Finn is about to do the absolute most heroic thing he has ever done, where he is like, he's not thinking about himself anymore. He's going to fly his little speeder down the mini Death Star gun that's blowing up the gate, right? Like, he has recognized, I need to self-sacrifice, which is heroic. We love heroes who self-sacrifice. That's like built into our DNA. Yep. Yep. Right? But then it's like, boom, completely foiled by Rose, literally sidelined, blindsided by Rose. She comes in and stops that. And you just have these moments, you know. Poe thinks he's this great hero because they destroyed a dreadnought, but Leia is trying to teach him, like, no, you're not a hero. We have dead heroes now. Like, they're all dead heroes. Like, what good to us is our dead heroes? Sort of thing. So you kind of have this weird tension of, is it actually okay to be a hero? Can heroes, like, can they go and do their most fulfilling heroic act? What does it mean to be a hero in the first place? And you kind of have, like, you watch the original trilogy, and it's like, clearly Luke Skywalker is a hero. Han Solo is scruffy, but he's also a hero. Like, he comes back in the end and helps Luke Skywalker, right? Leia is a hero, a heroine in her own way. There was space for them to be heroes, but almost The Last Jedi is like, nah, you're not real heroes. You're a bunch of incompetent failures. I don't know what you say to that.
Okay, I love it. Well, first of all, it feels like on the one hand, like, we agree on, like, the theme of failure here. I do feel like there is room to be heroic. I love that, like, we're talking about this theme, because I feel like every character that whether it's a established character before the movie or a character that's introduced in the movie, I feel like they are not the same character from point A to point B in this movie. And it's maybe the only one in the sequel trilogy that is like that. Hmm. And it might even be I'd have to go back and see, but it might be the only Star Wars movie that's like that. If you take them where they start in this movie and, like, where they end, there's probably the most character development for each character in this movie than any Star Wars movie. I'm gonna make that bold claim. What I'm trying to say is, you have it open where, yes, Poe beat the dreadnought, but who actually sacrificed and died was Paige Tico, right? She dropped the bombs and then ended up she died in a heroic moment. But then Poe needs to learn a lesson that, you know, just because you think that you can do something, it's not always worth the cost of the life, right? I think Poe, by point B in the movie at the end, where he's actually able to, like, lead without sacrificing, I would consider that a victory, even though it's not a flashy, like, blow up the Death Star victory. Them living to fight another day and leading, like, the resistance on, I would say, is a victory. Finn, similarly, he views heroics as, I'm just going to sacrifice everything and drive through this, which, the way that I view it, he wasn't even going to make it to the Death Star thing. It was just more of like a, I'm going to do this, and he was going to die trying to do it, right? And I know that, like, the Rose's line gets clowned on, like, you save what you love, you don't kill what you hate, which I like that line. I know it's corny. Some Star Wars is corny. Let Star Wars be corny sometimes. Yeah,
it's fine. It's Star Wars.
But I like the sentiment of it. And I think in that moment, that was her chance to be heroic. You know, she's kind of a nobody from a character and ability standpoint. Like, this is her chance to do something meaningful, which in her mind was saving this person's life. And we'll get into Finn and Rose's story arc in another episode. But, and then, like, you know, Rey, you know, has the champion over her temptations with Kylo Ren. Like, do I join him? No, I don't join him. I'm going to stick to the right, and then I'm going to go save the resistance. Need we talk about the Holdo maneuver as far as a heroic, you know, maneuver that, you know, that saved the day for them and caused a rift in that whole ship?
I want to shift gears a little bit. So you brought up space bombs, or I brought up space bombs. I don't know.
Dare we call them space balls?
Dare we? The Schwartz is strong with us, but yeah. So I speak fluent Star Wars. I think I'm a fluent Star Wars speaker.
I would say so. Sure.
But my real passion and knowledge lies in Lord of the Rings. And one thing in Lord of the Rings circles that we talk about significantly, and this might sound like a fancy or literary word, but we talk about this idea of verisimilitude. Let me put a definition on that. it's almost like an inner consistency of reality within the imaginal world. J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of Lord of the Rings, once wrote an essay called On Fairy Stories, I think. But he essentially outlined principles of what makes a good story a good story. And one of those was a feeling of an inner consistency of reality. So he gives an example of, like, you can't just say that the sun is green and then move on, because it's like, if you say that the sun is green, well, that has implications in nature. That has implications for the creatures that live in that world. That has implications for the colors of that world. And you have to think through all of those things in order to follow the story of a character who lives in that world and not our world. And if you break that feeling of inner consistency of reality, if you break the laws, or if you're not consistent with how the laws of that world work, that breaks the story. And all of a sudden, your mind as a story consumer or an experiencer of the stories, you're taken out and you realize, oh yeah, this is just a story. This isn't actually something. Whereas Tolkien feels like if you can properly craft that inner consistency of reality, you can bring the person into the story and they can feel like it's real. And that's like, that's why so many people, that's one of the things about Lord of the Rings people love, it does this so well, brings people into that story and into that world, and it just feels so real. In The Last Jedi, there are so many points where it seems like the inner consistency of reality is just broken. Like, it's just not there. We talk about space bombs, right? Okay, so it looks really cool, all of those space bombs falling out of the bomber. Like, that's a beautiful shot, I'll give you that. But it's like, there's no gravity in space. And I'm sure there's a planet right there. So it's like, oh, okay, your bombers only work now that they're in vicinity of a planet that has gravity? Like, how does this work? You have these bay doors that open up, somehow let things out, but other things don't come in, and somehow air comes in, but fire doesn't come in. And like, you get the same thing too with Leia. Like, Leia, she's burst out into space, and somehow this whole bridge is completely decimated down to like tiny little pieces, but like, Leia doesn't even have a scratch on her. No blood whatsoever. Has all of her hands. She's got more hands than Luke does now. And she can use the force. She can use the force to come in.
Skywalker, baby.
And somehow they open up the door to let Leia back in, and not everything else gets sucked out into the vacuum of space. Right? And so it's like, you just have all of these little things where I'm like, that is just not consistent with the reality. And I get it. We're living in a fantasy world, so the physics of that world can be different. There can be science, there can be inventions, whatever. That's great. That's fine. But you have to be consistent with the rules of that. And there's so many times in The Last Jedi that breaks that. And for me, that takes me out of the story, and it makes it really difficult for me to get back in.
I'm going to use a different B word. I'm going to use bends. I don't think it breaks it. I like the call out. I totally agree with that about Lord of the Rings. I think it's done a really good job. I think actually Star Wars, when it's at its best, follows that. But I also feel like it hasn't followed it for a long time. I feel like a lot of people's big issues with the prequel trilogy was just like the unbelievability that some of these things existed years before, you know, what we saw in the original trilogy. Like, there was a time it suspended the belief that like it could, the galaxy could deteriorate itself so much, you know, and see all these other things that like exist apparently in the same galaxy, right? And over time we just kind of accepted it, because I feel like lore and TV shows and video games kind of blended them better than the movies could. So we got to a point where it kind of felt like a shared reality. And I feel like actually a similar thing is happening today with The Last Jedi. Independent of that, I would be curious to know, like, bombers, the concept of like bombers existed prior to this movie. The difference was that it was more of like an energy bomb, right?
Yeah, like a Y-wing, so, shooting the ion, not the ion cannon, but you had Y-wings that were designed as like bombers.
TIE, TIE bombers too.
Right,
like,
exactly.
And bombers existed. So what we're really conflicted with is, can a kinetic thing drop that isn't energy based? But then you have to like ask yourself, like, well, what are the physics of like an energy bomb dropping versus a kinetic bomb dropping? Like, bomb dropping has been precedented. I guess I don't know what other we may handle Leia's force powers in another episode, but I guess my curiosity is like, what is the appetite for Star Wars fans to see new things versus being angry that like they're seeing something new that doesn't have precedence? And so like I entered the movie and my appetite for it would have been like, if Leia has Jedi powers, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see some manifestation of the Force around her, or her doing more than just having like a mental link with Luke. You know, like, can she use the Force? Does she use the Force? And I feel like this movie sort of answers that in an interesting way, a way that I wouldn't have thought of. I think dropping kinetic, like thermal detonator type bombs is something new, but I don't feel like it's different enough from the concept of bombers that already existed to where I was angry about it. If I was applying our physics to their physics, then I probably would be.
Well, I think my point is, we come with an understanding of physics in our world. We assume certain things about that world that when they break the physics of our world without any explanation, then we sort of go like, what? Like, even something as simple as like Leia opening her eyes in space. You know, like, I don't know what happens when you open your eyes in space, but I don't know if they stay in your head. You know, like, those kind of things are weird to me. And it's like, there's no explanation of how does she survive in space and how do these bombs fall down? And like, it's really, it's very subtle. But if you go back to episode 4, A New Hope, and you watch the Millennium Falcon, it's stuck in a tractor beam and it's getting brought into the Death Star. Right, you can hear over the speakers. I can't remember exactly what it is that they say, but their speakers, the base speakers, say, "Oh, we're closing the proton field," or something like that. Right, and so essentially, what that means is now particles could move through this energy field that is sort of a screen between that cargo bay and space. Right, so it's subtle, but there's just a little hint of, okay, in our world, if you had a big window like that, like, everything is going to get sucked out. But in Star Wars world, they have some cool energy field where they have solved that problem. And we don't know, we don't have to understand all of it, but we just have to understand things are a little bit different there. And they've solved that. I'm still in the story, right? And it's just, these things happen. And maybe you're right. Maybe in the world of Star Wars, we don't care anymore. I don't know. We don't care about verisimilitude or inconsistency of reality or the physics of the world or how they're explained or not explained, but I think it matters.
I was surprised. I mean, now it's been out for 10 years. I was surprised that the bombers was something that people had an issue with. Like, it shocked me that someone saw that and was like, there's no way. Because I mean, Revenge of the Sith shows like that kinetic objects will fly through space, like with those like little, I don't know, spider bots on. And I know they're droids, but like, they fly at the starfighters, they're bouncing around. Like, there's precedent for kinetic objects landing on ships. There's precedent for bombers. Like, seeing kinetic thermal detonators drop on a ship didn't seem out of the realm of possibility to me. Like, that was surprising. Leia, I could see why people would have an issue with it. It's kind of a, I didn't have an issue with the sequence. To me, it was like, oh, she has the Force. And then it just begs, like, I know what people feel like. It's like, well, does that establish that like all Jedi can do that in space? Like, how come more Jedi aren't doing that? To me, it just felt more like the Force just manifesting itself with her specifically.
So the Force can now choose who lives and who dies.
I don't know if the Force decided it. Or
it controls your actions?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm telling you. No. The Force, we're all bound by it. It binds us, illuminates us.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten to that particular theme yet of Luke teaching Rey about the Force. and he never got to his third lesson. So what was the third lesson that he was going to teach her about the Force and why the Jedi must end? He only got to two.
She has all that she needs, Aaron.
Okay.
She has all that she needs.
So says Yoda. So says Yoda, who has never been wrong before in his life. Yoda's never failed before. Well, Matt, I think we could probably talk about this stuff for hours. In fact, we will talk about this stuff for hours. If you are listening to this, I hope that you have been able to feel a little bit of what Matt and I felt as kids growing up, that Star Wars was there. We could talk about it out on the schoolyard. We didn't necessarily have to get into fist fights. Like, I remember being in grade school and episodes 4, 5, and 6 were out. And that's all we thought. That's like all of the Star Wars that we were ever going to get was 4, 5, and 6. Like, that was it. We had no idea of anything future. And I even remember saying on the schoolyard, I thought I was, I don't know, some really smart kid or something. And I was like, hey, did you know George Lucas had like plans for like 9 movies? But like, he's going to die before he creates all of them. Because in my mind, George Lucas was like 80 years old or something. I don't know. Right? But, you know, this is like 30, 25 years ago, some kids on the school ground, and we're debating Star Wars. You know, we're talking Star mm-hmm. Wars. There was so much in it for us, and it meant so much to us that it was worth considering and thinking about. And maybe that's something that we can still grab onto. We can debate the finer points of bombs falling out. We can debate if somebody can survive in space. We could debate if this movie deconstructs Star Wars and makes it something better. But at the end of the day, I think what's not debatable is that these stories have touched us as a generation in ways that very few other stories can. And I think that speaks to something universal in the human experience, that we all are striving on some heroic journey in our lives. We have failures, we have triumphs, we have teachers, we have villains, we have books that are there sometimes. Sometimes our ghosts of the past pop up and try to teach us something new, right? But there's something in the story of Star Wars that is true enough to the human experience that it's worth considering and it's worth talking about. Join us tomorrow. We'll be here with another episode. What are we going to talk about tomorrow, Matt? Should we do Canto Bite? Out of the way?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go Canto Bite. Why not?
All right, we're going to debate Canto Bite and the merits of Rose and Finn and their whole journey and why it sucks. Them's fighting words, Matt.
Them's fighting words. We don't have to destroy what we hate, but rather save what we love.
That sounds like what Rose said.
That's exactly what Rose said.
Because you are listening to Last Jedi, The Final Debate, I already know something about you. You care about stories that matter. Stories of courage, corruption, friendship, sacrifice, and the battle between light and darkness. So I want to invite you to my other show, The Lore of the Rings. It's a podcast exploring the world, wisdom, and wonder of J.R.R. Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings, which I think is the greatest fantasy story ever told. If you love deep dives and epic conversations, come wander Middle-earth with me. Visit ringspodcast.com and start your adventure.